Break, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. Let's start the hour with some headlines. Got to have them. Oh, you've been wondering what the next Last Dance was going to be. That's the world we live in. You can't even appreciate the Last Dance anymore. You got to go straight to what's going to be next. Well, fear not. I have an answer for you. Oh, you're ready for the next one? I said I wanted a behind-the-scenes look at Brady, right? Looks like we're going to get it. Tom Brady's journey to each of his 9 Super Bowls with the Patriots will be the subject of an ESPN series released next year. It's going to be called The Man in the Arena, Tom Brady. It's a 9-episode series that will include a look from Brady's perspective at the 6 NFL titles and 3 Super Bowl defeats he was part of. It's going to be a behind-the-scenes rare look, obviously. Deja vu all over again. It will be co-produced by Tom Brady's production company. So, you know, that little involvement there. But I'm just saying, at least we now have something to look forward to as we figure out what the next Last Dance will be. Next up on your headlines, Adam Scott will not return to the PGA Tour until July. He returned to his home in Australia after the PGA Tour canceled the Players' Championship because of coronavirus. And despite the tour's planned start for next month, he's going to stay away a little bit longer. Scott won the Genesis Invitational earlier this year, but he told the Australian Associated Press that he plans to sit out the first 7 tournaments, not quite comfortable yet with the guidelines that were put forth by the tour last week. So he will stay away. And some big news for Vanderbilt down in my home city of Nashville. Vandy making a little bit of history. Vanderbilt has hired Candace Lee as its athletic director, making her the first female athletic director and the first African-American woman to lead an SEC athletic department. So Vanderbilt ties that opening up, and they get themselves in the history books in the process with what I'm sure will be a fantastic hire. Those are the headlines you need. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. We're asking you guys to chime in. How should the NBA return? 888-SAY-ESPN. If you're not a fan of having to spell the little things, it's 888-729-3776. 729-3776. That's how you get in on the fun. We're asking you how the NBA should return. Duante, I think I'm saying that right. Duante, what do you got? What's your plan on how the NBA should
return? I think we should do it based on strength of schedule and also their opponent's strength of schedule, and probably see the teams like that and all the advanced stats like points per game, assists per game, like point differential and things of that nature, and not just do it just seeding the way we're doing it like this. Maybe we do it something like that. Maybe we'll actually get more and more people interested in watching the playoffs.
Yeah, look, I mean, anything that goes, that makes it interesting, I'm all in for. I'm still in love with this March Madness idea. We spent the whole break breaking down the March Madness concept on how we could continue, the March Madness, talk. Eric in Tennessee, what's your thought on how the NBA could return?
excuse me. Sorry. Good afternoon. I hope it's not complicated, but the basic gist of it is that each conference has 3 divisions. Each division has 5 teams. So the way you go is, a team's current division standing, they get a certain amount of points. You play everyone within your stand, you play everyone within your division twice. And kind of like how you do round robin in the World Cup, you get a certain amount of points for a win. But let's say, for example, Milwaukee, since they were winning, they have 15 points. The team in second place has 10. So it'd be very difficult for a team to catch Milwaukee. And then after that, the top three teams in each division make the playoffs per se, but the last two, the 8th and the 9th seed, they play an elimination game to play the 1 seed within the conference. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's innovative. I like the way that you're giving some value to the regular season. That's the toughest part of this. Like, we're either going to have to give a lot of value to the regular season or no value at all. I mean, that's really where it comes down to. It's one or the other. There's no middle ground on it. So I like the fact that you're giving a ton of value to the regular season in that process. Keep the thoughts coming. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's the way you get in on the fun. How should the NBA return? You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. Speaking of returns. All right, one conversation has been around Major League Baseball, and we've talked on this show substantially about the optics if the conversation's about money. And if you don't trust me on it, trust a former player. Atlanta Braves former great Tom Glavine was quoted in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution in an article saying, quote, if it were to come down to an economic issue and that's the reason baseball didn't come back, you're looking at a situation similar to the strike of 94 and 95 as far as fans are concerned. Even if players were 100% justified in what they were complaining about, they're still going to look bad. And that is his thought. So let's get to some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. As Stephen A. and Max, they break down, is Tom Glavine right that players will look bad if there's no Major League Baseball season?
I think Glavine's right. I'm not saying under any circumstances that the Major League Baseball Players Association should just accept any condition that the owners place upon them, because we know that the owners can't be trusted, and I understand that. But I think overall what he's saying is that they've successfully gone about the business of painting the players in a bad light, and I don't believe that the players are going to look good when you've got Snell coming out and Bryce Harper co-signing what he had said just the other day. I got to have my money. I can't take the risk for half my money at a time, at that moment in time when 33 plus million people had already filed for unemployment. They were out of jobs. And you've got this pandemic ravaging households across the nation and across the globe. For him to come out and say something publicly was just an absolutely idiotic, stupid thing for him to do. And Bryce Harper, who just recently agreed to a 13-year deal, all right, in excess of $300 million in the offseason, you know, last season rather, you just can't do stuff like that. When you do stuff like that, it's just foolishness. And so to me, Glavin highlighting that and pointing that out, it could potentially be tantamount to the cancellation of the 1994 World Series, where people didn't get into the minutiae, the particulars. What they were saying is, damn it, figure it out and give us baseball. And when the cancellation of the World Series came in the fold, it took two dudes who clearly were cheating because they were steroid up in Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa with their home run record, chasing Roger Maris' single season home run record. It took that to somewhat resurrect the sport of baseball. This is America's national pastime that we're talking about here. And they are clearly number three behind the NFL and the NBA in terms of the younger demographic, in terms of ingratiating itself with its audience. Baseball's audience is clearly the oldest, and if they don't do something about it, the sport is going to fade even more. In order to prevent that from happening, we know that the owners are greedy. We know that some of them can be a bit corrupt. We get all of that. And we also understand they've been unfair to the players to some degree. But in the end, the players of Major League Baseball have universally been recognized over the years as having the strongest players' union. They've gotten away with a lot of stuff themselves. And in the process, they've taken that for granted, and they've snubbed their nose at the public by and large, because they were hell-bent on having their way and living by their traditions and what have you. And it hurt their sport in terms of the fan base and their relationship with the fans. This, to me, Max, I think points in that direction just as much. I think Tom Glavin is right about this.
Whenever the subject comes up, when greedy players, they make millions, and it's pointed out that the owners make billions, well, they take all the risk. Okay, well, here's the risk, guys. Times are bad. Here's the risk. Now that there is a downside, right? Because whenever we say, oh, they take risk, whenever an MLB team comes up for sale, there's a line out the door to buy it, which means everyone recognizes it's a good investment. Even as baseball's marginalized in American popular culture, it still makes a lot of money. It's a $10 billion a year industry. Okay, but now it's risk time. Oh, no. We don't want to assume that liability now. We'd like to pass that along to the players. Not only, Stephen A., do they want a prorated salary based on the number of games played in case it's fewer games, which seems very reasonable to me. You and I agree about certain things. As strong as the players' union is, and we are frequently on the side of the players, and in baseballs it's very strong, we agree about, for example, limiting the length of contracts because it warps the economics of the game, stuff like that. I'm all for prorating salaries. I think that makes sense. Of course, you play fewer games, you get less money, all that stuff. No. The owners are not content with that. They're saying, we also want a 50-50 revenue split, which is what the other leagues have. NFL has better than that. NBA has that. They've been unable to get that in baseball because it's really a form of a salary cap. And they've been unable to get it. So they're using the crisis as an opportunity in an underhanded way, in my view, to set precedent for a system they've been unable to implement in negotiations during regular times. Stephen A., you're right about, and Glavin's right about, the perception of the players being greedy if it's an economic issue that stops baseball. But that's only if guys like you and me in the media point to the greedy players. Let's really describe the whole picture. It's not the greedy players, although greed is involved, I'm sure, all around. It's human nature. It's the owners that would stop it. The owner is saying, no, 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 we want, in addition to prorating your salaries, new measures that we've been unable to negotiate during normal times. No, I know we say that we make the lion's share of the money because, or we make so much money because we assume risk. But now that it's risky, we would like you to take that risk. It's ridiculous.
First, take your take on ESPN News. Look, there's just no easy way for this conversation to happen. And everybody involved with it has every right to be worried about money. Think about how many of you guys are right now, and I understand that. But the conversation can't become about that because so much of the country is in this situation. So many people right now, as I've said continually, are worried about how they're going to put food on their plate, on their tables. And when you're in a pandemic where you've got these incredible unemployment rates, and, you know, we had a great caller that called in yesterday at the end of the show and talked about the fact that he's unfortunately right now having to live in his truck. And you know, that's a reality for a lot of people that are listening right now. You're dealing with things you never could have been prepared for, because this is that time in life where no matter what you've done, this wasn't something anybody could have expected. And when the entire world is dealing with these sorts of things, it's easy to suddenly look around and say, what I need is escapism. That's what sports can offer us if it can be done in a healthy and safe way. That has to be the conversation. The minute Major League Baseball, whether it's because of the owners or the players, make it about money and not about health and safety, it will become something that vilifies the sport and the players to generations of fans. Ultimately, for whatever reason, in these sports, in the NBA, we gravitate to players. In other sports, we gravitate as fans towards taking the side of owners. I don't know why that's what we do typically, but as a mass, as a general group, that's what most people do. And most people are going to look at players in this situation and say, oh my God, how could you be worried about money when you make that much to play a game and I can't figure out how to feed my family? Right or wrong, that's the narrative that's going to be created. And that's not a narrative that Major League Baseball is prepared to deal with right now, because it's the sort of conversation that will change the way generations of fans view the sport. It's First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. We're asking you guys, how should the NBA return? Josh in Michigan, what's your take? How should the NBA return?
Yeah, I'm not big on, you know, changing a lot of things. I like the simplistic way of doing it and just go back to the, you know, regular season. Give them as much time as they need to get back into shape. You know, they're not going to be in mid-season form, but go back, play the rest of the regular season, play the, you know, go through the playoffs and everything, do your full, you know, off-season.
We were losing him there, by the way, and I get what you're saying. There's one problem, though. If you want some straight talk, here it goes. Straight talk wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. You can't just come back and play the rest of the regular season. I mean, if they need some time to get into shape, and suddenly you're talking about what could have been a 3-month layoff, layover. So if you're looking at 3 months, where do you make that time up? You can't have your regular off season. It's gonna immediately affect next season. So the option of just coming back, playing the rest of the regular season, and going to the playoffs doesn't exist without impacting next season. So at some point, something's going to have to be modified. So speaking of modifications, there's been a lot of conversation about what college football could do, should do, and whether or not there will be college football this year. If you haven't checked it out, ESPN.com has a fantastic article that breaks down the financials on it. It is a long read, but it's an important read. If you're a college football fan, go out and check it out. It talks about the $4 billion that will be lost if there's no college football this season. Also talks about how each college, each Power 5 school would be losing over an average of $62 million per school, and how these catastrophic losses could affect the need for college football. Even if it doesn't seem like it's safe, how much does the financial aspect affect whether or not they want to play the game? In the meantime, Paul Feinbaum joined First Take today to talk about how confident he is that we're even going to get college football.
Paul, how confident are you that we're going to have college football this fall?
We are going to have college football this fall, Molly. I don't have any doubt about that. And that's after consulting and talking to countless athletic directors, commissioners, and people that are involved in intercollegiate athletics as well as presidents. There's a buzzing confidence. Now, there are many questions. That's obvious, just like every other sport that you talk about here. There's also maybe a question of when it begins. Can we get that first game in Dublin the first weekend? But there is no doubt in my mind there is going to be a college football season.
Herm Edwards was on the show a little over a week ago, and he didn't seem as confident as you were. He certainly didn't eliminate the possibility of college football happening this season, but he didn't seem as confident as you were, because he used this analogy. He said, if it's not safe for the students to return to campus, how are we going to justify having players perform playing college football. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he says.
Sure.
How does Paul Feinbaum answer that question for college football fans everywhere?
Well, I agree with him. And Stephen A., when I answered the question a minute ago, I think it depends really on where you are. I live in the South, as you know. And in the South, there's a fierce determination to play. I'm not saying at any cost, but they will get it in. What Herm says is on the minds of everyone. Now, the question that we can't answer right now is it lip service, or are they really going to be sincere and diligent in what they're going to do? And I think there are some questions that we haven't even heard about yet. You know, will players be eager? I mean, they want to get out of the house just like you do and Max and Molly and everyone else. But I've talked to some parents as well who have serious questions. So what is going to happen next is simple. In a lot of places, really throughout the country, I think, you're going to see athletes return to campus for limited and voluntary, I put in air quotes, workouts. That is going to be a major test of whether the schools are set up, because right now, I can't tell you how many different versions I've heard of this college football season. From 4 weeks ago, athletic directors say, no way, we're not playing without fans. That's not college football, to what Harbaugh said yesterday.
Paul, I find the idea that they could actually complete a college season, I'm highly, highly skeptical about that. I think in areas where there's political allegiance to leaders who are flying in the face of health experts or burying their opinions, et cetera, and also warm weather regions, there's much more optimism in the South. Obviously, you have a confluence of both those things. And so, but I believe they might be able to start. Whether they finish is something else. And this idea of 40 to 50,000 fans potentially in the stadium absent vaccinations is complete, to me, pie in the sky. But let's say they can do something without fans on some limited basis, only conference games, for example, something like that. What do you think that looks like?
I think it looks rather bizarre, Max, and I do understand where you're coming from. And all I've tried to do here is represent what I hear. In fact, I talked yesterday on our program to Brian Kemp. He's the governor of Georgia, who has been in the fire from a lot of criticisms, a lot of critics for opening up his state early. It looks like so far he's been successful. But he told me we will have football on the first weekend of the season. We'll have college football in Atlanta. There are a couple of games scheduled there. And he was extremely confident there'll be pro football the following week or two with the Falcons. And I just think it depends on where you are talking. But I converse with college football fans every day, primarily from the South, but from other parts of the country. And there is an intense desire. I've heard scary things, albeit from fans who are disregarding this pandemic, like a lot of people up and down the dial. The majority of the ones I've spoken to will find a way to get to that stadium, whether they have to sit 6 feet apart or sit on top of one another.
First Take, your take on ESPN News. Look, if you've listened to me at all, you've heard me say quite a bit that I don't want students, athletes, put in any different level of risk than regular students. I don't want, if a campus is social distancing or if a campus is empty, I don't think that we should hold the kids to a different standard. I believe that. But I also will throw myself under the bus a little bit. I don't have any skin in the game, right? So one thing that really hit me when I read the ESPN.com article is the financial ramifications. As much as we talk about it and we think about it, when you actually see the numbers, it's breathtaking. When you start talking about like $62 million on average per school that'll be lost, you're talking about also, as the article points out, over half of the teams in FBS, over half the schools in all the world of college football don't have the reserves to handle these losses. You're talking about catastrophic loss that will change the game forever. I mean, who steps in? Who pays the bill? If there's no college football, does college football just go away for many schools? Do sports go away for many schools? Does somebody have to step in and pay a bill for many schools? I mean, this is an interesting debate that luckily today we don't have to have concrete answers on. But this is why it's important, more important than ever, that college football be expanding or examining every possible solution, because realistically they can't get caught off guard. The ramifications, if they're wrong in the college football landscape about what has to happen here, will be huge and altering for the entire future of all of college athletics. That's a staggering statement to make. I'm not trying to be overdramatic, but when you actually see the money and you talk about $4 billion worth of losses, but then you see how it affects each and every one of these schools, it raises real questions of whether or not college can afford realistically to be as cautious with athletes as I think they should be. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save in just 3 minutes. 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Come on, you've got 3 minutes. It's a pandemic. Come on. You can make the 3 minutes. Go check out progressive.com. Okay, we're going to keep taking your take on how the NBA should return. Plus, who needs to be the best player on the Lakers for them to win it all? First Take broke it down. You'll hear that. But first, it's time for some straight talk. Even though most live sports are on hold right now, big wireless companies have not stopped playing games. They're always trying to lock you into overpriced contracts. With Straight Talk Wireless, no contracts. Runs on America's best network, same as the big carriers, but you save up to 50%. $45 a month gets you the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data. Then 2G, you might miss sports, but don't play games, you'll lose. That's Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless, no contracts, no compromise. More Straight Talk coming from you guys with your take. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Do not forget, Navy Federal Credit Union has a mission. Put members first by making their financial goals a priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. We're asking for your take. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. If the NBA comes back, how should it return? What do you want to see? You want to see a weird playoff? You want to see a few games? Do you want to see some preseason games that don't count? You want to see the rest of the regular season play out in some way in a shortened playoff? What do you want? Give me your creativity. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the fun. We'll get to your take in just a second. But as you know, we've been doing this a little, we've been having a little fun as we've been doing the daily look at who the best players in the NBA are with the First Take series primetime players.
The seventh player on our First Take primetime players NBA ranking is Anthony Davis.
Lob to AD.
AD is averaging 26.7 points per game this season, which leads the Lakers and ranks ninth in the NBA.
Anthony Davis.
Since entering the league in 2012, Davis has the most 20-point, 10-rebound games of any player in the NBA.
Anthony Davis.
Player number seven, Lakers forward, Anthony Davis.
All right, so that's our ranking. We give you number seven. Anthony Davis comes in at seventh on the list. I think that is staggeringly low for Anthony Davis. I can't figure out who we're putting ahead of these guys that suddenly Anthony Davis would be at number seven. So the question is, if Anthony Davis is the best player on the Lakers, could the Lakers win a title with him as their best guy? Stephen A. Max broke it down today.
Absolutely they can. Look, there's an argument he's their best player now. I don't think he wins that argument, but if you would say, hey, is AD in the MVP? Does he deserve MVP consideration? Yeah, he deserves consideration. You know who has the highest PER player efficiency rating ever, Stephen A., for their career? It's who you'd expect. It's Michael Jordan. He's the best ever. He has the highest one. You know who's second for their career? LeBron James. Shaq is fourth. In other words, I'm not just throwing out a stat at you that takes all these different kind of, you know, points, rebounds, assists, blocks, all these things at free throw percentage into consideration. It correlates very well with who we think of as the most dominant players. AD is third for his career of all time. Now, LeBron's ahead of him, right? But in recent years, in fact, AD's PER has been higher than LeBron's most years, by the way, including this one. The advanced stats, Stephen A., forget about just points scored. Like, this takes everything into account, right? The advanced stats, win shares, AD's ahead of LeBron. Win shares per 48 minutes, ahead of LeBron. So I understand why we all think of LeBron this way. He's the orchestrator. You take LeBron out, this thing doesn't work. Not like this. But you could say the same thing for Magic or Oscar Robertson when they had Kareem. Right? But who was the best player on those teams? Who won the MVP? It was Kareem. You could say the same thing for Kobe when he had Shaq. But Shaq was the best player on the team. Now, it's not quite the same thing as that. I think that LeBron is probably better. I think he's better than AD at this moment. But you could make the argument right now that, in fact, AD's better, that LeBron knows how to deploy AD as a weapon, and they're both great, and that makes them work great as a team. But that doesn't mean LeBron's better than AD. It just means AD's not a ball handler. He's a big, and in today's game in particular, it never looks like the big is the best player on the floor, but he might be.
The question wasn't whether or not AD was a better player than LeBron. The question is, can the Lakers win the title with AD as the best player? And I'm telling you, no. Without LeBron James, AD with the Lakers is the New Orleans Pelicans. That's what they are. That's number one. Number two, LeBron and his ability to facilitate, averaging 25, 10, and 8 this season, leading the league in assists, running that offense the way that he does, is what makes him so valuable to this particular squad. The Los Angeles Lakers, as presently constructed, because that's what we're talking about here, you cannot win if you have to be so deferential to Anthony Davis and LeBron isn't what LeBron is and needs to be. There's no way they're beating the Clippers, which is why your argument is damn near sacrilegious, since you came out from day one talking about how the Clippers are the one, are the team to beat. They're going to be the favorites. They're going to knock off the Lakers. Kawhi Leonard's going to be the league MVP. Anthony Davis is not the one to stall all of that. It must be LeBron. Well, if LeBron can't do it, the Lakers have no shot. And that's what we're talking about here. Can the Lakers win the title, meaning these Lakers win the title as presently constructed? You can't do it unless LeBron is the best player on the team. And what I mean by that is all the things that he brings to the table. Just because Anthony Davis averages more points than LeBron doesn't make him better than LeBron. And I know you know that. I'm just speaking in general. That doesn't make him a better player than LeBron. The all-around talents that LeBron brings to the table, it's pivotal to their success, especially to beat your Clippers.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I mean, this Clippers-Lakers debate is going to be everything for people, no matter what version of the NBA we get when it comes back. And I think, you know, ultimately, Anthony Davis, we're sort of sleeping on at this point. I mean, the fact that he's number seven on this primetime player list is a little shocking to me. We're taking your take. How should the NBA return when it comes back? What do you want to see happen? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Getting a lot of tweets on this, by the way. A lot of you guys seem to like two different tournaments. One tournament for the championship, the other tournament for make it March Madness style, last team standing gets the top overall pick. Sean suggested that on Twitter. I think that's a really good idea, honestly, and that's the sort of thing that the NBA could easily do that would be innovative, that would be fresh, and that would give people an opportunity to sort of dive into it, and you get to try it out and see whether fans like it for the long term. Because if something like that happens in the pandemic and everybody says, oh, it's kind of cool, then the NBA has used the opportunity as a launching pad to try something new that could stick. Nick on Twitter says, top six in each division, teams 13 through 22 play bracket one for four spots for title, 23 to 30 play bracket one for lottery picks. So again, more of these separations. I do like Joe's suggestion on Twitter, by the way, says NBA games should be played in high school gymnasiums. Not a bad idea to put them in cool different places if they're not going to be played in standard arenas because of social distancing. So I don't hate that concept in general. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Andy in California, what do you got? What's your take on how the NBA should return?
Thank you for your time, Fitz. I like the idea for the two tournaments, and my focus is as a gambler, I miss a lot of the action. So my idea is to automatically have a full tournament with all the teams. The Lakers and the Buccaneers are eliminated from the first round, leaving 28 teams. Winners of that 28 teams leaves 14. They go to the winner side of the bracket, and they fight for the championship. The rest of the 14 teams fight for the number one seed or the number one draft pick overall. You have the first six teams with the highest record have a first-round bye. And here's where the strategies can come into play. Because if you are the Indiana Pacers, if you are somebody like the Brooklyn Nets and you don't have Kevin Durant healthy, and or somebody like Oklahoma City, you can tank that first round and not and say, hey, we're not going to win a championship. There's no way. But if we can get the first round pick or the first pick overall, we might be able to change our future. Or we can trade that pick get ourselves a veteran. I'm just saying there's lots of options and strategies that come into play. But overall, as a gambler, I want action. And I miss it.
Look, I love what you're saying. And actually, you're right. I think there would be a lot of teams that would look at it and say, well, we don't really have a shot at the title, so let's lay down in that first tournament so that we get ourselves into the second tournament. I'm not sure that's a great look for the NBA, but I don't mind the take at all. Henry in Tennessee, what's your thought on how the NBA should return?
Well, the way I look at it, I think the NBA should play out the season. And once they finish the season, then they could start their new season in December.
So why impact next year? Why play out? Why is this season more important than next season?
Well, the reason is not the importance part. It's so that they wouldn't be head up against the NFL.
Well, I don't mind that thought process. I mean, I've long since said that the NBA starting on Christmas Day would make a ton of sense to me. Although let's keep in mind the NFL decided to put a game on Christmas Day this year. So they're going head to head with the NBA. But, look, I don't mind the concept of starting the NBA season later or shortening the NBA season. I support all of those things, but I can't imagine a situation where they would want the pandemic to essentially affect two seasons. Chewy in Long Beach. Chewy, always love it when Chewy calls. What do you got, man? What's your take?
Hey, good morning from the West Coast. Hey, you know what? Just before I start this out, the lowest seed to ever win an NBA Finals championship was the Houston Rockets, and they went in as a sixth seed. These seventh and eighth seeds are always eliminated early. Let's just do away with them. I say you cut the schedule down to 72 games. The Lakers have 63 in right now. That gives them 9 more games to play. They funnel in a 2 to 3 week season, and then you go right into the playoffs. The teams that are battling out, this is going to be great for Zion. What are they sitting, like ninth or eighth or right around that cusp? The kid has short minutes all season long. He's been healthy. He's rested. He's going to play 36 minutes now. That's going to be a fun game to watch, whoever they play. But I think you go to 72 games and you get right into it and you just keep going.
I don't mind that take. I mean, giving them a few games, I would, for me personally, I'd rather just go preseason essentially games and not have them count and freeze the standings where they are. But I do like giving some incentive to come in and play through it. Always love Chewy's take. All right, we're going to keep taking your take, obviously. But coming up, where do the Cowboys rank in the NFC? What should the NBA look like when it comes back? We'll talk about all of that next with a very special guest. It's First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. If you missed any of the show today, shame on you. You can go check it out. The second hour is on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast brought to you by Eno, the Capital One assistant that catches things that might look wrong with credit card, sends an alert to your phone, and most importantly, helps you fix them. What's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details. Oh, I am excited for this. I am pumped up. There are just times that you know you're going to have a guest on, and it's going to be awesome. And this is one of them as the great Will Cain joins First Take Your Take. Is this a career highlight for you, Will? I feel like this is like right up at the top of the list.
My man, let's see. I would rank my top 5 television appearances something like this. In no particular order, at the bottom of the list would be Stephen A. Smith, mano a mano on First Take, Bill Maher, late one Friday night, back in a previous life, and at number 1, Jason Fitz, right now.
I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at it, but we're going to make you mad now. I wanted to get you on because, as always, everybody's always talking about the Cowboys. And you and I had a conversation last week where we agreed, you know, that the Cowboys are an incredibly talented roster. As I continue to look across the landscape, though, the question of are the Cowboys a top five team in the NFC came across the First Take radar today. You, with your Cowboys analysis and fandom, you know this team better than anybody. So that's a more difficult question than I think we give it credit for, because the NFC is stacked. So where do you rank the Cowboys in a stacked NFC? If everything goes right for everybody, where do they sit?
Near the top. I think the NFC is pretty wide open, at least for five or six teams. I think there are five or six teams in the NFC that have a legitimate shot to win the NFC and thus the Super Bowl. And the Cowboys are absolutely in that mix. As you said, man, the roster is undeniably talented. What's held that team back for years has been Jason Garrett. I want to be clear about something. I don't think Jason Garrett is a terrible coach. I think Jason Garrett is an eminently mediocre coach who had an excellent roster. And I think with Mike McCarthy, who is a very underrated coach, we hope to see the Cowboys fulfill their potential. And that is a team that can absolutely represent the NFC in the Super Bowl.
So I guess what's difficult for me, Will, is that as I continue to look across the board, we have these lofty statements we make. You know, the Cowboys should be a Super Bowl contender. The same thing we're doing with Brady, where we're saying, hey, well, you know, Brady and the Bucks, what is success for Brady and the Bucks? Because people say it should be playoffs. It should be a Super Bowl. I don't know that it's that easy for anybody in the NFC right now. Like, I could make a valid argument that the Bucks are going to have an incredibly difficult road and end up a wild card team. And I still think that would be, Tom Brady could be successful in that because the NFC is that good.
Yeah. If they end up a wild card team, we can forgive them for that, but their ceiling and actually where they go should be a deeper playoff run. That's what that Bucks team should be. And I agree with you, it's not going to be a layup. I mean, in the South, you have the Saints and the Bucks who are capable of making deep runs. In the East, you have the Cowboys and the Eagles. In the North, I think the Vikings are better than what they showed us last year. I'm not as big a believer in what the Packers have done, and I'm not a believer in the Bears and the Lions yet. And then in the West, that's the hardest of them all, Jason, because I know we can say three teams, and maybe even four, could potentially be playoff teams. I don't know which one we want to kick out between the Cardinals and the Rams, but the other two are for sure playoff teams.
Right, and that's why I think when we look at success and what is success or failure, you know, I don't know how we quantify that because, frankly, for any of these teams, we come in with these lofty expectations, and you said, you know, it's not going to be easy, but I can look at any of these teams, whether it's the Cowboys or whether it's the Vikings, as you mentioned, and I can make, I think, a compelling case for why they're the best in the NFC or why they're the sixth or seventh best in the NFC. So it becomes trickier. Will Cain joining us, First Take Your Take, by the way. Of course, you want to check out the Will Cain show coming up after that. Real quick, though, I want to get your thoughts on one other topic because, frankly, you're smarter than I am. So I need your help figuring something out. ESPN.com has an article out there showing $4 billion as the possible loss, $62 million per school if there's no college football. If that is real, if those numbers are real, what pressure does that put on college football to happen even if it shouldn't?
I don't know that if I'm smarter than you. If I am, it probably came from watching movies like Over the Top. So I want to revisit your past question before I answer your present question. You said you don't know how to quantify success. Did you ever see Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone?
No.
Make that your weekend homework. Arm wrestling movie.
And in that movie, shocking that I missed that one. Go ahead, yes.
The villain. It's a nice father-son story about an 18-wheeler truck driver who is an arm wrestling champion. I don't know how this missed your radar, but it is absolute gold. And in that movie, the quote-unquote villain, Bull, says when looking into a camera, second sucks. The way you quantify success is you win it all.
That's just not realistic. Like, you're going full Ricky Bobby on me here. Like, you can finish second, you can finish third. Like, it's not, there is still success. I mean, if Brady goes out and throws for 5,000 yards, 45 touchdowns, and that team only wins 10 games, he was still successful.
That's not how he got to winning six Super Bowls, by agreeing with you on that statement.
Oh my God. Okay. We've totally gotten sidetracked on this, and I'm now looking at Over the Top, and I realize that A, I'm not mad that I missed this movie, and B, are we sure that you weren't the former country music guy? Because I mean, you're bringing in an arm wrestling movie. Like, there's an element of country to you, Will Cain, that I think we should really explore more of. I'm just saying.
Without a doubt. And just when you go home this weekend, you watch Over the Top, all I will say is you're welcome. Really quickly on whether or not college football will take place without fans in the stand and a loss of $4 billion in revenue. What I'm increasingly believing, Jason, is we will have college football and we will probably have it with some fans because money and inevitability will take over. We just cannot continue with economic suicide.
Yeah, well, you said that well, and could and should are two very different conversations that we're going to be having over the next few months about many of these sports. Coming up, Will Cain's going to be hanging out. Will, thanks for joining us. I hope we get to do this more. You can tell me more about random movies I haven't seen. Will Cain, check out the Will Cain Show coming up next. It's First Take Your Take.